what hour your clock strikes here, it's always Halloween. And I'm always your haunted host, Luce Tomlin Brenner. Welcome to Small Frights Friday. On these very special listener-curated episodes, I like to share a selection of calls from our All Hallows hotline and letters from our eek mailbag. Today we are kicking the episode off with a letter from a fellow alumna of Bowling Green State University, where I went to college. And they're correcting me on my lack of knowledge about BGSU ghosts, which I appreciate. On our episode last week, Small Frights Friday Cemeteries episode, I mentioned how we had a cemetery on our campus, but I didn't know of any urban legends or ghost stories related to the campus. So we have one here today, and I love it. All right, here we go. The regular title is BGSU Ghost. Luce, how do you not know about the ghost of Bowling Green's theaters? Well, former theaters, the Joe E. Brown and Eve St. Marie theaters that used to be in University Hall until the 2016 renovations. I don't know if she moved or is haunting something in the new building. If you were involved with theater on campus, you definitely know about her. In the 1920s, Alice, a theater student, was on her way to campus for an awards ceremony where she would be receiving Best Actress for her role as Desdemona in Othello. But her car spun out on some black ice and she died in the accident, leaving everyone else waiting for her in the theater. From then on, she haunted the theaters of University Hall. Props would be misplaced, set pieces would break, lights would malfunction. Some of the students then, and in the 2000s when I went to school there, claimed that they had seen her in her Desdemona costume. I'm not certain how soon after Alice's death, but a tradition started where no matter the play, the stage manager would take center stage before the audience was let in and formally invite Alice to attend the play. This would prevent anything from going wrong. There was another tradition in which they would always reserve one seat for Alice so that she could watch the play. In case of a sold-out show, a folding chair would be placed for Alice so that she would still have somewhere to sit. If there's no place for her in the audience, she'll try to be on stage, and that can cause problems. When I was there, these traditions were always observed. It would be fun if breaking the traditions meant that you'd get to see a ghost on stage, but alas, all that would happen was random bad luck. There was no exact way to prove that ghosts exist behind the shadow of a doubt. I don't know what's happened to Alice since the theaters were lost in the renovation. Maybe you can contact someone currently involved in campus theater to find out. Thanks, Mary. Mary, thanks so much for this fun and spooky letter. I don't know anything about Alice, and it might shock you and the other listeners to know that I actually was not involved with the theater program at Bowling Green when I was there, although I was also there in the 2000s. So I wonder if we went to school together, how fun would that be? I spent a lot of time in Hannah Hall because I was a women's studies, American culture studies double major. And Hannah Hall is connected to University Hall and was very, very creepy, but I never saw any ghosts. I also was a radio station person, naturally. So that's the other space where I had a lot of time. And the radio station, 88.1 WBGU, was very creepy. But again, I never saw anything. So this was a terrific story. I am going to reach out to some of my friends who were in theater at that time and see about it. You're breaking my heart. I had no idea that there were renovations to the theaters and to University Hall. The last time I was in Bowling Green was 2011, and it was so different then that it felt really heartbreaking. And I can't stand how much everything at my college is changing. Has anyone else been through this? I'm okay with personal change. I have a really hard time with like changes to my hometown or any schools that I went to or stores, anything that's like in my life as like a cherished memory. I want to stay the same out in the world. Physical things changing really bums me out. Anyways, this was a great story. I had a very similar ghost story at my high school, Elyria High. Also tore down. Everything I love is gone. So I went to Elyria, which is west of Cleveland, and we had a really cool auditorium that had a ghost story that was very similar in that we always had to save a specific seat for our ghost and nobody could sit in it or it would cause a whole thing. And a number of times, they were like the types of seats that like, you know, movie theater seats that are up so you can walk past them and only come down once you sit on them when there's weight on them. And this one seat would often be down during a performance, but it could have also been, they were old seats. I don't know all the physics behind them, but I really like that that's a common theater ghost story, that this ghost must have a seat. They simply must keep watching the mediocre theater of high school and college kids. Oh my goodness, what a hell. So that was fantastic. I would love to learn more if anybody out there, if there's any other former Falcons out there, spread your wings and give us a call and let us know if you had any experiences with Alice at Bowling Green or any other campus ghost stories. Give us a holler. All right, now we have another ghostly story from a contributor and patron, Elisa.
Hi, Lucy. It's Elisa again. I was inspired to call in when you were discussing cemeteries on your stories on Instagram. My favorite cemetery I used to live right next door to in Cincinnati, Ohio. It's called the United American Cemetery. And at the time, maybe it's not this way now, but this was about 20 years ago, it was a very untended cemetery. All the graves were on a hill, and the hill was kind of wasting away, so the cemetery had kind of a melted look to it. So the graves at the top of the hill were all intact for the most part, and then the graves on the side and the bottom of the hill were all, you know, in various states of leaning over to the ones at the bottom of the hill, lying almost completely flat, face down on the ground. I used to spend a lot of time there because it was a good place to let my dog run around unleashed to get his fillies out. And one day I found him kind of sniffing around a certain part of the hill about halfway down it and found that there was a grave that was actually exposed. The hill had eroded so badly in this area that you could actually see into the grave. And there were two shin bones, and the corpse was wearing a very tattered tan suit, but I could only really see inside from the knee down. So that was a fun discovery. I called the city, and they said the cemetery was private and that the bones were so old. You know, if they were bones, it wasn't like a health hazard or anything. And I kind of lost interest in caring about this open grave any further and just appreciated it for what it was. Anyway, love the podcast and keep up the great work.
Elisa, my goodness gracious, you saw a corpse. Ew, wow. I cannot believe it. I don't even know what I would have done in your situation. What an interesting experience. So, thank you for telling us about it. I looked up the United American Cemetery in Cincinnati and learned a little bit about it, which I think you'll all find Fascinating. So, the United American Cemetery is a historic African American burial ground. It was founded in 1883, but it includes many graves that had been moved from an earlier cemetery in Avondale. So, the earliest legible tombstone is from 1832. So, as you stated, Elisa, it was in disrepair. It was originally founded by the United Colored American Association in the 1800s, but by 1968, that cemetery association no longer existed, and for decades it had been gone completely, totally neglected. So, in the late 60s, the ownership of it was transferred to the Union Baptist Church, which, if you go to union-baptist.net, you can read all about it, basically where I'm getting my information from now. I will put that link in the show notes so you can check it out for yourself. But it's really fascinating because this burial ground is really important. And of course, I have to make up that this is due to racism and, white people in general having a lack of interest in preserving or honoring Black spaces. So the fact that it's in disrepair at all, you know, you're not seeing Spring Grove and some of the other like major Cincinnati burial grounds, you're not seeing them in disrepair. So it's a huge issue because this burial ground is a resting place for Underground Railroad figures, as well as writers, politicians, business people, artists, and all kinds of civil rights leaders, which is extremely important. And their cemetery needs to be beautifully maintained so that people can go and visit their graves and pay them the respect that they deserve. So I just want to list off some names of some prominent figures that are buried here that are really interesting, and I want to make sure people know that they're there and you can go visit their graves. So William H. Beckley, who was a Underground Railroad conductor, John Isom Gaines, who was an abolitionist, Priscilla Jane Thompson, who was a poet, Frank A.B. Hall, the first African-American elected to city council in Cincinnati. That's amazing. This was in the late 1800s, early 1900s. Horace Suddenth, a businessman and an owner of Cincinnati's Mance Hotel. Jeannie Jackson DeHart, star of Nashville's Fisk Jubilee Singers. I am not familiar with that group, but they sound incredible. Irvine Garland Penn, a journalist and an officer in the Methodist Freedmen's Aid Society. Phoebe Boots Allen, a deaconess in the AME Church and a pioneering social worker. Henry Ellis, a Civil War corporal in the 54th Massachusetts, quote, Glory Regiment. And Charles H. Thompson, an early voting rights advocate and Episcopal priest. These are all people who were alive in the 1800s and early 1900s. Really fascinating backgrounds and stories, and I think it's incredible that they're all there for you to go visit in Cincinnati. So again, I'll be linking this in the show notes so you guys can get a little more history out of that. And Elisa, I'm so grateful that you shared this experience with us. Okay, next up we have a fun merch idea in the Eek Mail. Here we go. Hi, Luce. Here's a merch idea. A clock where all the numbers have been replaced with the word Halloween so that no matter what hour my clock strikes, it's always Halloween. You're the best, Luce. That email is from Becky. Becky, you're the best. What a genius idea. I love it. I want to make it. I'm ready. I am not a graphic designer. I know a little, but I don't know how to make a clock. Are there any clockmakers out there? Get at your girl. Let's collab. However, all that to say, I did recently put together a little sweet, humble Redbubble shop with the art that Rose Fedek designed. So our podcast art, the beautiful, cute, fun logo of our jack-o'-lantern with the little black cat hopping out of its head. That was designed by the incredible illustrator Rose Fedek. And now on Redbubble, you can order clothes and prints and greeting cards and phone cases and cups of all kinds and tote bags with the cool podcast art on it. I also made a fun, no matter what hour the clock strikes, it's always Halloween, print as well. So you can check that out also. I have the link in the Instagram, but basically it's, you just go to redbubble.com and search It's Always Halloween Podcast and it'll bring up the shop. I'll also link it in the show notes. So come get yourself some gear. At this point, it's too late to order it for Christmas, but it's not too late for New Year's presents or birthday presents or to use your Christmas money and get yourself something cute. So I'm going to be adding more stuff there, including, you know, jokes and references to various things we talk about on the podcast. If you have any fun merch ideas, please send them my way. Or if you're a graphic designer and you want to work together, I would love to hear from you. Physical, like fine art, that's not my area of expertise. I think I've got a great eye and wonderful style, but I am a performance artist, not a physical artist. So let me know if that's your skill. Maybe we could make something cool together. All right, Becky, you're the freaking best. I love that idea. And hopefully we can make a clock that says Halloween on it and sell it by next Christmas. All right. Next, we have a fun phone call from Kelly with yet another idea for what to call each other, our community here.
I really, really love the podcast. Thank you so much for all the time and effort and care that you put into it. It's been really great listening through this fall and Halloween and now coming into the Yuletide season. I just wanted to give a quick call and throw out another suggestion for our group name. So what do you think of Halloweenians? I thought that sounded like we're from the country of Halloween. Anyway, I hope that you're having a really great day, and I really appreciate the pod. I'll look forward to the next episode. Cheers.
Kelly, thank you for such a sweet message. You're welcome. It is my pleasure to put this podcast together for you and all of our Halloweenians. Halloweens? Halloweenians. I like it. I think that's really fun. I love that we're all from the country of Halloween. That is really, really cute. I think it's my favorite so far. We had so many good ones to pick from, so it feels bad to be like, I have my favorite. It's like looking at a whole box of kittens and being like, some of you are trash. Only one is the real kitten for me. So I love all your suggestions. I love all your kittens. But I really do like Halloweenians, Halloweenians. Maybe I have to practice saying it first before I embrace it. Oh, and I know that this listener's name is Kelly because she called back and said, I forgot to say my name. It's Kelly. So so trust me when I say that her name is Kelly. And now we have a couple eek mail follow-ups from people who contributed last week and wanted to add a little more information. So first, we have a terrific message here from our beloved Jenny, who wanted to write in to let us know more details about the cemetery that she mentioned on her call on the last Small Frights episode. Now we can add this to our list, our cemetery map. So she said the cemetery that she visited on Halloween Day was called Mount Hope Cemetery, and it's in Rochester, New York. She says she's been there many times and that she used to work nearby and says sometimes she would go there on her lunch breaks to walk or sit in her car with the sunroof open because cemeteries are so relaxing. Yes, Jenny, totally. Cemeteries are relaxing. Thank you. She said it's not only huge, but it's beautiful, especially in the fall. And it's also home to Frederick Douglass and Susan B. Anthony. That's wild. How cool. She says there's a non-spooky but still super awesome tradition of people visiting Susan B. Anthony's grave on Election Day and putting their I voted stickers on her grave. Oh, wow. That's so wild to sit back and think about women who were, you know, fighting for abolition and for voting rights in the 1800s that, like, have modern women, you know, 200, 150 years later, being like, we're doing it. It's hard to sort of conceptualize, you know, putting yourself in the place of like the mid 19th century and then zooming forward to the 21st century. It's history's wild. And I hope if you guys are learning anything from this podcast, it's that not only is it cyclical, but it also is that change takes a really long time and that if you're working hard, it's going to pay off eventually, just maybe not in our lifetimes. Anyways, going back to Jenny's letter, she wanted to also say that the Sleepy Hollow Cemetery is obviously amazing, large and beautiful, and home to Washington Irving, Andrew Carnegie, and several of Alexander Hamilton's children. It's also right next to the Headless Horseman Bridge. Bonus! She signs off, thanks for everything. Stay spooky, Jenny. Jenny, thank you for everything. We always appreciate your contributions. I have such a crush on New England, and I can't wait till it's safe to come visit. I want to check out both of those cemeteries. So we will add those to our new map. And then I have a follow-up from Tony, who wrote in last week to suggest trick-or-treaters or pumpkinheads as our name. I do still really love pumpkinheads. All right, I think Halloweens and pumpkinheads are my two favorite kittens. So Tony writes in to say, hey again, Luce, it was great to hear my email on this week's Small Frights. In regards to the call for online shops, I don't have an online shop, but I do pet portraits, and you can see those over on my Instagram at TonyDixon_art. Thanks for everything you do. Again, thank you for everything that you do, Tony. You've contributed beautifully to the podcast, and my heart goes out to you. I was checking out your Instagram today. Really cool work. So go give Tony a follow. He just put up some interesting art inspired by A Christmas Carol, which, you know, a famous ghost story, because that was the big thing in Victorian times. Christmas used to be spookier than Halloween. So check that out. And maybe this would be a fun gift for a friend, family member, or romantic partner to get them a pet portrait. So reach out to Tony, support a fellow Halloweenian. And I want to hear from you, any makers or creators out there. I love our community so much, and I think it would be rad if we can, you know, reach out and support each other during the holidays, but also always. So a couple of other listeners and contributors I wanted to shout out. Obviously, I mentioned Marvel and Moon last week. They make candles. I want to shout out Lunch Meat VHS. My other hobby on the side of Halloween is collecting VHS tapes. And this guy has an incredible collection of very cool apparel. And they actually distribute new movies and old movies on tape. And he also has a really cool blog and zine all dedicated to VHS culture. So if you're into that kind of thing, check his Instagram out. At Lunchmeat VHS. Check out at Neon Altar. Susie May curates this really incredible queer witch metaphysical shop. I think y'all'd like that a lot. Check out at Halloween Huns. Jen and Nick are really incredible artists who are huge spooky fans. They've both called in and contributed to the podcast, and they make really cool arts and crafts that I think you'd also get a kick out of. Also, Isabel O'Hare is a writer and poet and editor, and they just put together an incredible anthology of erasure poetry that's now available at Barnes & Noble. How cool is that? So check that book out. It's good for the spooky feminist in your life. I mean, all feminists are kind of spooky, right? Isn't that our thing? I also want to recommend This Will Scare You podcast, another podcast that is very fun. It's interview-based, and it's all about urban legends and ghost stories, and I know y'all would like it. They have a really fun shop as well with a really cute t-shirt that says Be Kind to Cryptids, and another one that says Fraidy Cat Club, and I know that there's some of you out there that love spooky stuff but are also easily scared. And then another podcast I want to recommend called A Touch from the Past podcast, which is all historic ghost stories and really fascinating deep dive podcast as well that you guys would really dig. So those are some listeners and contributors to It's Always Halloween who are out there making really cool stuff, creating really awesome projects, and I want y'all to go out and check them out and see if you connect and if there's something good for you there. And then we can all come together in our talents as we try to bust through the heavy chains of capitalism and work for ourselves. Oh, did that just get too scary? I think it did. Okay, you guys, listen up. Do you have something that you want to share with us? Give us a call at 802-532-DEAD. Or write us an email at itsalwayshalloweenpodcast@gmail.com. If there's something specific you want to learn or you have a memory or an idea, shout it out there. We want to hear it. You can also reach out on our Instagram page at It's Always Halloween Podcast. You can also find us on Patreon, patreon.com/It's Always Halloween. I want to welcome our two newest patron members, Laura Blackheart and Jacqueline Chicos. Is one of those last name pronunciations correct? I am sorry if it's wrong. I appreciate you. I value you. I honor you. I will happily pronounce it correctly next time if you send me a correction. So Laura and Jacqueline, welcome. I want to thank all of our patrons for your role in creating this podcast. Right now you're helping me produce 2 of these Small Frights episodes a month, which is huge. My first Patreon goal is to just cover the cost to produce it. It costs $500 a month, and you have all gotten us 13% of the way there. Lucky 13! Thank you so much. If you, listener, love It's Always Halloween, please subscribe. Your support means more time for me to create more material for you. Again, check us out at patreon.com/It's Always Halloween. Today's episode was researched, written, and performed by me, Luce Tomlin-Brenner, with all the contributions of our lovely writers and callers. The editing, theme music, and sound design is by Pete Burns. Thanks, Pete. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at LTBComedy and Pete at Mittenberries. Pete just released a new single and will be releasing his first album soon, so you definitely must check out his socials to listen to his beautifully haunting music. You can subscribe to It's Always Halloween anywhere you find podcasts, but we are extra tickled to be featured on the NPR One app. If you use Apple, please subscribe and write us a little review there so that other like-minded ghouls can find us. It helps us out so much. Your word of mouth is what's helping us thrive. So thank you. Don't stop telling everybody how much you love us. Thank you again for listening to It's Always Halloween, and come back next time unless you see a corpse and you have to make a lot of calls and you run into a ton of red tape. That's rough.